I think it's the minhag, that the night before Hanukkah, or the Shiva before Hanukkah, we're in here. Thanks to the Yeshiva's PTA. I'll share with you a story, and then a thought that I actually heard from Avraham Lopiansky, who's a Rebbe down in Silver Spring. It's a wonderful, wonderful, powerful thought about Hanukkah. But he says a story, well, he didn't say the story, I'm sorry, I read the story. It's an interesting story that I'm going to use as my introduction for tonight. Moshe was a hard-working innkeeper. This goes back a couple hundred years, back to the days of the Paritz, who was the local landowner, who, if he got mad at you, you were in big trouble. And basically, you had to keep him happy. And Moshe was successful. He had his inn. He made his money. He paid the Paritz on time. They had a good relationship. And everything was very peachy, very wonderful. And years went on like that. And they had a wonderful relationship. And then Moshe fell on hard times. And things weren't going well, and he wasn't able to pay. And every month, the parts would come to demand his money, and he would beg for just a little bit longer, and hopefully things will turn around, and he'll have the money soon, and it just wasn't happening. And the months wore on, and the debt accrued, right? And, they had a good, long-standing relationship, but he knew that, you know, you get on the parts' bad side. The parts had full reign over you, could do whatever he wanted, And if a Jew didn't pay, after a while, he'd kill him. So Moshe is getting more despondent as the months go on. And then one day he knows that he's in big trouble, because it's already been half a year and he hasn't paid a penny, and things are just getting worse for him, and he's getting desperate, and the inn is not making any money, and people aren't stopping like they used to. So he decides to do something desperate, because he knows his life's in danger and his family's life is in danger. So he decides that he's going to run away. He's going to take off, and once he's out of the Paritz's jurisdiction, he'll be safe. He'll run somewhere else. Paritz owned a huge amount of land, so he found out the Paritz was on vacation for a couple of weeks in a spa up north. So he packed up his family into the back of the carriage, and they set off. And they're on their way, and they're traveling for a while already on the outskirts of the city. And who does he see? Four mighty steeds pulling a fancy, extravagant carriage. And there's only one person around that has that type of carriage. It's definitely the end of the parts. And Moshe starts davening, Hashem, I'm in trouble now. You got to help me. And he thinks quickly, and he stops his own horses, and he jumps off. And the parts comes there, and he sees him. And he stops, and he bows before the parts. And he says, Moshe, what are you doing here? He says, well, actually, we were just going on a vacation. We're going on a holiday. We have a holiday coming. He said, a holiday? I know you Jews. He says, I don't know of any holiday at this time of year. He said, oh, yes. This is the festival of flight. So the parrot says, the festival of flight? I never heard of that one. He says, yeah, we're going for a few weeks, maybe to our relatives, a little bit far out, and we'll be back, and I'll be sure to pay the money as soon as I get back. I know I owe the money. Okay, Moshe, you have a wonderful trip, and enjoy your festival. And Moshe gets back in the carriage, and they head off. And meanwhile, the parrot goes into town on the way. Before he goes home to his estate, he decides to go through the marketplace. And he stops and wants to buy some vegetables to stock up. He's been away for a while. And he's in the marketplace. He sees Feifel, one of the Jews over there. And he says, you know, your buddy Moshe told me that there's a holiday now. He said that it's the festival of flight. He says, but you Jews, you never work on a holiday. If it's a holiday, what are you all doing out here? So Feifel was witty and realized what happened. And he said, this is a different type of holiday. You see, the festival of flight is very different than New Year's and Passover and all those holidays. The festival of flight, you take whenever you feel you're ready for it. It's a personal holiday that a person takes when he feels that this is his time. And the parrot says, oh, that's fascinating. See, when Moshe felt that this was his time, very interesting. So he took the festival of flight now. Wonderful. So what I wanted to use that cute story to talk about how the festival of lights is actually, we term Hanukkah, is actually inextricably bound to the festival of flight in a certain sense. And it's a great introduction. And that's what we'll touch upon this evening. The Chashmonaim entered the Beis HaMikdash. In the year that the miracle happened, it was just a miserable, horrible sight. The temple itself was just ravaged, and it was in terrible, terrible shape. And it was a terrible sight to see. And we know they found the oil, and it was 3 years to the day, on the 25th of Kislev, when a hog was offered on the altar. The Maccabim, when they came in, they destroyed the altar, the menorah, everything was gone. They built a new menorah, they built a new mizbech, everything they had to redo. But everything needs to be fixed up. And of course, as we all know, the Yontif of Hanukkah has a special relationship with the menorah, of course. That's what we're all getting ready to do. Just about the overwhelming majority of every service that was done in the Beis HaMikdash had to be done by a Kohen. Kohen, the Kohanim are the chosen, the Kohanim are the people that were designated for the special avoda. Just about everything had to be done by Kohanim. It's extraordinary, actually, that the lighting of the menorah could have been done by a non-Kohen. According to the Rambam L'chadchila, which means that it was perfectly fine. He couldn't go into the sanctuary. Somehow, if he was able to light from the outside, if he had something wrong, or if they brought the menorah out, he was allowed to light. A non-Kohen is allowed to light. The Ravid says, the Ravid is Rambam, often the Rambam's counterpart, he says, well, it wasn't L'chadchila. It wasn't like he was supposed to do it. It was if he already did it, then you don't have to redo it. But either way, the lighting is kosher, bizarre. It's valid if it's done by a non-Kohen. This is in contradistinction to Meitiv Efaneros. Meitiv means to prepare. Preparing the candles of the menorah had to be done by a Kohen. And Halo Davaru, isn't that strange? That the lighting itself, which would seem, and any person would say, that's the most important part of the avodah of the menorah, is lighting the menorah, of course. That part definitely at least could be done, was kosher by a Kohen. But cleaning the neros and taking out the grime and preparing it for the next night and putting in the new oil, all that had to be done by a Kohen. Strange concept. But there's a tremendous, tremendous lesson that lies there, and a tremendous idea that applies to Hanukkah as well. Reb Chaim Vital was one of the, if not the foremost, the most famous disciple of Arizal. Arizal himself didn't write his own teachings. Reb Chaim Vital, his disciple, wrote a lot of his teachings. And Reb Chaim Vital explains that this world is composed of four forces. There's Eish, Mayim, Ruach, and Afar. Fire, water, wind, or spirit, and dust. And everything is in this world is a combination. On some level, some are more Eish, some are more Mayim, some are more Ruach. But everything is a combination, is a mixture of those four forces. And within every one of us as well is a mixture of those four forces as well. And we know, talking about fire, because that's the topic of the day. So, fire in a person's personality, there's a good fire, and there's a bad fire. Bad fire is when a person has kas, when a person has anger, or hakpados, a person is particular about things, or a person is jealous. Those are all fiery emotions. And then there's a fire that's used l'tov, that's for good, and that's the slavos, the she'ifa, the person's desire, and the wanting and the pining to accomplish and to go grow closer and to do more. That's the two parts of Eish, of fire. There's another point about fire, and that there's two ways to, I don't want to say extinguish a fire, but two ways to nullify or negate the effect of fire. One is to put it out, pour water over it. The second way to negate the fire is if you put up a divider between you and the fire. If you have something in between you and the fire, so the warmth and the light will be blocked. And the thicker and stronger is the thing that divides you from the light, the more you won't be able to be affected by it, and the less of an effect it will have on you. That is a reflection of our souls. The neshama, there's a fire within every one of us. But the more we surround those fires, that fire that's within us, that fire that's untouchable, that will always burn, that's there, that spark. As long as the more we surround it with things that block us, that disconnect us from it, the less we'll be able to feel it. Because there are things that impede, there are things that get in the way. And the physicalities of life and the other things that we become busy with impede our ability to feel and connect with that fire that's within every one of us. the Sefer Balatanya, the Sefer Tanya, very, very well-known Sefer. It's perhaps the Shulchan Aruch, the most fundamental of all Sefer Chassidus, of Chassidic thought. It was written by the first Lubavitcher Rebbe, who was a tremendously holy person, but of Chassidic thought, not just for Chassidus, of deep philosophical, mystical thought. And the perhaps the most dominant theme that traverses the entire book of Tanya is that every person has this inner fire. Something we've spoken about many times. That every person has an ish pnimi. Every one of us has an inner fire. We don't need Judaism. We don't need Yiddishkeit to inspire us. Meaning from the outside. We need the Judaism to bring out what's already within. We need to bring out the fire within ourselves. Much like a bellows blows up a flame that's already there. It's not bringing in something that's not there. It's to bring out what already is there. And that's what the Tanya speaks about. Probably the most unified idea that he keeps, that is at the core of the Sefer. There's a fire within every one of us. We have to bring it to the core. We have to bring it to the front of our being. The great Dubna Magid. So Dubna Magid, as you've heard of him, Yaakov Krantz, he was perhaps one of the greatest of all time of the ability to, through his oratory, to inspire. And he was known for his incredible, poignant and apropos parables. When someone asked him, how is he so amazing at thinking of parables, he told him a parable as well, which I'm not going to say at this moment. It's quite a good one. But a group of maskilim, of secular Jews, came to mock him. And they came to one of his lectures. And he was fire and brimstone, as we can imagine. He was tremendously moving and passionate. And these people came over to him afterwards and they said, "Your speech is a waste of time. We sat here and listened to your speech. Everybody's so moved. Don't flatter yourself. You're nothing special. You see, we walked out and we're the same people. We were Machal Shabbos before, Machal Shabbos now. You did nothing for us, Rabbi." So Bnei Magid smiles and he says, "Let me tell you a parable. Let me tell you a parable." And he says about a fellow who wants to have a fire. It's the middle of the winter, but it's hard to schlep logs and to light. You know? And one day he's walking, and he sees in a store, he sees a fellow with a bellows sitting there. Unbelievable. And he's doing it, and the fire's raging, and it's warm, and it's toasty. Wonderful. He orders 10 of them. And he goes home, and he's sitting there a whole night. And he goes back to the store owner, and he says, "You ripped me off. What kind of business is this? I bought 10 of them. They're all faulty. None of them work. I want my money back." He says, "Not what you are." He says, "It only helps if there's a fire there. If there's a fire that's already existing, so you blow it up and it catches and it explodes. But if there's no fire there, what are you blowing on?" So the Magid said, "Have a wonderful evening. If there's something to work with, that a person is a glow, so then a person can be inspired. But a person who shuts themselves off and shuts off the fire, you turn off the pilot so you can blow all night long, it's not going to do anything." The truth is, if they were Jews, then they did have that fire within them. But they didn't want to feel the fire. A person doesn't want to be inspired. You can stand on your head. You're not going to inspire them. It might make them laugh, but you're not going to inspire them. We don't need new fires. It's about Tanya, the idea. We don't need new fires. In fact, the Torah talks about an Eish Zara, foreign fires that are a negative thing. One other one of you brought a foreign fire. There's fire already there. We have fire. It's within us. It's built into our being. It's built into our essence. We got to get it out. We have to bring out what's already there. So that our avoda, our lifelong goal, is twofold. First of all, to take away the impending dirt. To take away the things that impede us from feeling what's already within there. To feel that passion and feel that connection. And the second thing is then to blow. To coax up the fire. That's only the second part, though. The Zohar HaKadosh records a conversation between the Rosh Masifta Derekia, the head of the heavenly yeshiva. Wonder what that PTA is like. Conversation between the Rosh Masifta Derekia and the Pshim Bayochai. And the Rosh Masifta Derekia, and essentially he was explaining to him, Tzadik Varalo, why bad things happen to good people. The age-old question. And the Rosh Masifta Derekia tells Rosh Shimba Yochai, if you have a large block of wood, huge block of wood, and it's on the fire, if it's not lighting up, you have a huge wood over there, why is it not catching? Batishle! Smash it! Break it up! Chop it up! Visnahara and it'll light up. You know what the problem is? It's too much wood. You have to break it up into small pieces so that it has what to catch, and then it'll light up and all the pieces will catch. But if it's too big, it won't catch. So he was saying it as far as Tzadik Varala, why sometimes HaKadosh Baruch Hu does bad, what we perceive as bad things to good people. But the point is that it's not that the wood is lacking the means to be on fire. It's that you have to use it properly. You have to be able to separate it so that it's able to light up. The potential is there, but it has to be arranged properly. Then it'll be able to grow. The tchunas hanefesh, the character of a person is that if we are stationary and we're placid for too long, then we become overgrown. Not just physically, but spiritually and mentally. When a person, you know, God forbid, what happens to people sometimes when they become older and they don't have what to live for anymore, or they don't have friends, or they don't have things to keep them occupied. So God forbid, sometimes their faculties atrophy because they don't have that spirit. They don't have it's not used. That's what happens. We become caked over. We become we atrophy. And just like a chimney needs to be swept, and just like those old kerosene lamps, they have to be cleaned out. Our neshamas also, they need to be cleaned out. And time alone accumulates grime. Just like in the physical world, so too in the spiritual world. There's Gemara in Brachas, which says that the Talmidei Chacham and the Torah scholars, there were so many of them, that when they got up, the dust that they generated was so intense that it blocked us up. Gemara says a statement like that. So the Kutzker Rebbe, who was known for his sharp, pointed witticism, said a line. He said it in regards to a lot of things, but very pointed line. Where he said that sometimes a person can sit in the base medrash, but he's there for so long. Not that he's in the base medrash long, but he's uninspired. From what he's, even from learning Torah, but he's sitting in the base medrash and he just does it, and he becomes overcome with dirt and grime. And so that the dirt is so intense that he can't even see the sun anymore. Meaning, every person, even a person sitting in the Beis Medrash, needs to inspire himself. Needs to make sure that he's moved, that he's moving in the right direction. Otherwise, the grime builds in. And the person doesn't have that spark. The person has to spark the flame that's within him. The avod of the menorah, fire of the menorah, parallels the fire within each and every one of us. And therefore, the focal point of the lighting of the menorah is not the lighting itself, but it's the cleaning it out and bringing out the potential. The actual lighting is just the catalyst. It's just the final thing. The fire is within. The fire is there. But we have to make sure that there's nothing impeding, there's nothing getting in the way. Because that's the reflection of us. So the actual lighting can be done by anybody. Because that's just bringing out what's already inside. The cleaning, that has to be done by a Kohen. That's holy. That's on a higher level. The lighting obviously is holy as well, but on a higher level. It says in Parshas Baloscha, we read it the last day of Chanukah, Baloscha es haneros, the command, God commands Aaron, when you will light the candles. So Rashi says, quoting the Gemara, the classic words, that you have to light it at shetehe shalheves olamei elecha. You have to light it until the flame goes up on its own. By the way, just point out, when a person lights Hanukkah candles, a person should be particular to make sure that the candle stays there until the flame catches completely. Sometimes people are too quick. Which shall have us until the candle goes up on its own. The idea of putting the fire to the match is only a way of getting there, that the fire lights up on its own. The fire is there. You have to light it. You have to bring it out. The Gemara in Yuma says that the fire atop Mizbeach, we know that the fire in the first Beis HaMikdash, we know that the first Beis HaMikdash was a much higher level of sanctity. The fire atop the first Beis HaMikdash was Revutza Ka'ari. It was crouched like a lion. Whereas the fire in the second Beis HaMikdash was Revutza Kekela, was crouched like a dog. When a lion is crouching, a lion is full of strength, of power. That's what a lion's being is. So a lion, when he's crouching, he's proactive. He's ready to spring. Even if he's pushed back, he's ready to attack. He's poised to attack. Whereas a dog, on the other hand, subjugates itself. It's in defeat. It crouches in defeat before its master. The fire in the first Beis HaMikdash was far more intense. In the second Beis HaMikdash, it was much more subdued. And the greatness of the fire of the Chanukah, of the miracle of Chanukah, was that it was a reflection, a throwback, I guess, to the fire of the first Beis HaMikdash. For 8 days, it was Revutza Ka'ari. It was sprung up like a lion. They prepared the candles, and the fire came out. In all avoda, anything that was done in the Beis HaMikdash, any service that was done in the Beis HaMikdash, tumah, impurity, was an impediment. But in the menorah, tumah was more than an impediment. It destroyed it. It was a deficiency in the. It was more than a deficiency. It totally took away from the avoda. The example, the difference is between if you have a stain on your clothing, so it's annoying, you're embarrassed, try to cover it. But if you have a speck of dirt on your glasses, it's intolerable. It drives you crazy. The fire of the menorah is the fire that's within us. And when there's dirt in there, it impedes and it blocks us from connecting with our source, with where we really are. And Lopiansky said, he said so powerfully, we don't need to bring in inspiration as much as we need to keep external forces out. The inspiration is within us. Inspiration. We have to bring it to the fore. We don't have to take outside things and inspire us. Really, when we're inspired, it's not because outside people can, but the person is inspiring what's within us already that gets lost somewhere inside to come out to the forefront. You take off the logs that are blocking so that the fire can flame, the fire that's already there. And that's the process of Chanukah. And that's why I say that the holiday, the festival of lights, has to be inextricably bound to the festival of flight. There has to be a certain amount of flight from the nature or the morass that we get stuck in. The things that hold us back and the things that, you know, the feelings that we're stuck where we are. To remove that grime. Remove those impurities. So that the fire that's within us will come out. It's already all there. You have to bring it out. The song that we sing on Chanukah, sing it tomorrow night, Yevanim nikbitzu alai. The Yevanim, the Greeks, they gathered upon me. Azai bimei chashmar. In the days of the chashmonoi. Ufertzu chomos migdalai. They breached the walls of my towers. The Yevanim, you hear this over and over again, but it was such a strange thing. They had the ability. No one was stopping them. They could have destroyed the Beis HaMikdash. They didn't. They breached the Soreg, the Seches Midos, which is a tractate in Mishnayos, which discusses the measurements and the dimensions of the Beis HaMikdash, says that the Yevanim breached 13 breaches in the Soreg. The Soreg was an area which was Adkan, until there the Goyim were allowed to go. They could enter, they can bring sacrifices, or they could bring them to the Goyim, but they weren't allowed to traverse that point. The Yevanim breached 13 breaches in there. That's what they didn't want. They didn't want that there should be a difference, that Kli Yisrael should think they're special, they're different. No, we're all the same. They breached the Surah. And after that, when the Chashem Rambam overtook the Beis HaMikdash, they enacted that everyone had to bow 13 times. 13 times to, so to speak, counteract the 13 breaches. But the Yevanim didn't want to destroy the Beis HaMikdash. They wanted to take away its value. They wanted to take away the flame. That's exactly what Timu Kol Hashmanim. First, that's the next line. They breached the towers and they rendered impure all the oil. That's what they wanted. They wanted that it should be all equal. You don't need a fire, a flame. Easy, chill. We're all the same. We're in this together. But the Chashem Rambam, Moser Nefesh, they went out of their way because they wanted a purifier. They knew this idea that it's not the fire alone. It's the purity of the fire. It's such a beautiful concept. It's not the hadlaka that's the main thing. It's not the lighting. That's just Eichatimsa. That's just the last step. It's the metivus aneirus. It's the cleaning of the neirus so that the fire is lucid and beautiful and clean. So they wanted that fire to be pure and holy when they came back after the Yevanim. So minoser kankanin, from what was left in those jugs, nasanes la shoshana, came a miracle for the shoshana. A shoshana is a rose. A shoshana is a rose. A rose among thorns. Rose grows in thorns. And that's what Kali so wanted to show. We're a rose among thorns. We're not all the same. Fix up the surig. Fix up that point where they breached. Because we're shoshana. There are two times that Kali Yisrael is called shoshana. It's in Tehillim, actually. But there are two holidays of the year, particularly, when we're called Shoshana. Hanukkah and Purim. Uminosa kankanim nasa nes la Shoshanim. And Purim? Shoshana's Yaakov. The rose of Yaakov. Because Hanukkah and Purim, more than any other holiday, was when Klal Yisrael from within, from us, showed that we're different. We understand that we're special, that we have a holy mission, that we're different people. Hitler and Haman reminded us of that on Purim. On Hanukkah we fought for that. So Nas and Nes, the miracle occurred La Shoshanim for those who are the rose. B'nei Vina, those who had understanding, those who understood the importance of this idea, Yimei Shimona for 8 days, or days of eight. Eight is the number of that reflects beyond nature. Shabbos is the highest point within nature. It's a reflection of a future world. But Shabbos itself is the highest point within nature. It's a number seven. There are six directions. And this seventh is the focal point from where it all branches out. That's Shabbos. Everything branches out from Shabbos. All six directions come from Shabbos. That's seven. Eight is the number beyond nature. Shemini Atzeres is the eighth day. It reflects. It's only Klal Yisrael. Right? The other days of Sukkot, we bring sacrifices corresponding to the other nations of the world. But Shemini Atzeres is only Klal Yisrael. It's the eighth day. Chanukah is 8 days. It goes beyond nature. V'nei vina yimei shmona, days of eight. It doesn't say 8 days. It doesn't say shmona yamin. Yimei shmona, days of eight. Days that reach beyond nature. That reach beyond ourselves and bring out the spark, which is metaphysical. It's not a physical spark. It's not something you could explain. And Kavu Shir Renan, they made it days of song, of music. But it's the ability to have flight. I saw a beautiful thought recently. When Yaakov Avinu is leaving, he's dispatched, Yitzchak sends him off. I don't have a chumash here, I have it written in English. And Yitzchak sends Yaakov, who went to Paddan Aram. Yitzchak sends Yaakov, he goes from Paddan Aram to Lavan. A few psukim later it says, Yaakov obeyed and he went to Paddan Aram. Again, it says again, Yaakov went to Paddan Aram. Then, this is the first pasuk in Parshas Vayetzei, Vayetze Yaakov mi Be'er Sheva, Vayel Charan. Yaakov left Be'er Sheva, and he went to Charan. He told us twice already that Yaakov went to Paddan Aram. Why does the Torah have to go back and say, Yaakov left Be'er Sheva, and he went to Charan? He told me, no, he's on his way. What do you tell me that he left there in order to go to Charan? And the idea that's so subtle in the Pesukim, I never thought of it this way, is brought out. You can never go to a new place until you've left the old place. A person has to be able to move on. I read such a powerful idea after 9/11, I once wrote this, I didn't prepare, so I don't have the exact details, but the point will come across. A person was davening, I think it was Moshe Shapiro from Eretz Yisrael, where he said to him, "What are you davening for?" So basically the person said, "I'm davening that things should go back to the way it was." And the Moshe Shapiro said, "That's not the proper tefillah. The world can't go back to the way it was. HaKadosh Baruch Hu, there's a path, there's a process. Why? We don't know. But the bottom line is we've gone on. So the tefillah is that HaKadosh Baruch Hu should help guide us along this path, that whatever's supposed to happen, we should be able to deal with it, we should be able to handle it. It should be peaceful from here on in, we shouldn't have to suffer. But you can't pray that it goes back to the way it was, because we've gone on. Vayetze Yaakov mi'Be'er Sheva. For Yaakov to go to Charan, he had to leave Be'er Sheva. He had to put it behind him. And this actually was, I saw this from Daniel Lapin. So he said he said over a story about a member of his congregation, he said. His father passed away and he didn't care. He said he didn't care. They had been estranged for years and couldn't stand the guy and he hated him. He didn't care. And he said, you know, I encouraged him at least to sechiva. He wasn't interested. Didn't care. And he said the following 6 years I witnessed his life deteriorate. He had problems with his wife. He had problems with his children. Terrible problems. He was a psychiatrist. He lost his practice. It would shrink terribly. And Rabbi Lavin said, my father trained me never to give unsolicited advice. So I kept quiet. And finally, one day, he came to me. He said, okay, I'm ready. Tell me. Help me. And he told him this thought. Vayetze Yaakov mi'Be'er Sheva vayelech Charan. Before you can go on, we have to have in life, and anything, we need to have closure. That doesn't always mean when there's a tragedy, hopefully. But anything. The person has to be able to move on. They have to be able to get past the last step in order to go on to the next step. And he said that the fellow took it to heart. And he was able to move on. But for the festival of life to really have its true effect, there has to be a festival of flight at the same time. I just read November 7th in the news. A 91-year-old Dutch Jew who fought the Nazis in World War II celebrated his bar mitzvah. His name was Hans DeLille, if I'm pronouncing it right. He said he was shaking during the service. He was at the Kosel. He asked them to please make him bar mitzvah. He never had the chance. He fought the Nazis. I think he said there was always something missing in my life until now. Earlier in the year, he met an Israeli ambassador, and he asked him to arrange it, and he arranged it. Sometimes it takes a person that long before a person can go on to the next step. Before he can go on. Hopefully, we don't wait that long. But in order to, the idea that comes out over here, that the beauty of Hanukkah is that we have it within us already. There's greatness within every person. It's a matter of bringing it out. The hadlaka itself is the last step. The lighting, anybody can do the lighting. But it's the meitav saneros to make sure that the candles are ready. I have to say, the candles that I use, so I sit there, because I've had the experience, and to me it's the most frustrating thing in the world when you light, and then a minute later it goes out. Because the ones that I use, you have to make sure you're using the right size, and so I tried it tonight. I told my kids, this is not the Hanukkah candles, but I had it, when I left, it was lit. The windows were, shades were down. Because the Meitav HaSaneros is the prerequisite to prepare it. The Hadlaka itself, the lighting, is just the last step. The Meitav is to prepare it and make sure that there's nothing impeding. Because when there's nothing in the way, then the Shalhevis Olam Me'aleha, the flame will rise on its own, and it will burst out from within us. And the Mitzvah Hashem, it will warm us up and drive us forward throughout the long winter. Have a wonderful Feilach and Chanukah.